I think it a little sign that was down at the square early, justice versus just us. And I think going forward, this is my personal opinion, we need an opponent. I'm going to, rather than say Corporation X, I'll say Walmart. There are plenty of employees that were in big litigation at the Supreme Court against Walmart. There is plenty of communities who have been decimated by Walmart. And I suggest that consider Occupy could bring them to their knees. Boycott Walmart, litigate against Walmart, use all the creativity against Walmart. I think they're on the Dow Jones Industrial 30. And then, having brought down Walmart to their knees, look around at what corporation comes next. We think the 1% of wealth, economic power, controls the politicians. President on down are just pawns. So I say we use Occupy to take on a real opponent, gather our forces around that effort, win it, make that point, decide what winning means, and then go on from there. It's a way to organize. Our opponents are global. I think local developments are great, but in terms of economic justice, our opponents are global. And the unions are concerned about these global power elites. That's my suggestion.
Can you hear me? Everybody hear me? Huh? My name is Joe. To comment about what you just said, that is a waste of energy because we don't need to think about the negativity in our community. We need to think about how can we connect the community. Okay? What the professor just said, we should go for the community. We should occupy everything that's bombed out in Baltimore right now because right now there is property that is being sold by whoever, I don't know, I'm not like super connected knowing what property, who owns what, blah, 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 but most of it's owned by the state. So what we should do as people that occupy space, obviously, because that's our name, is that we should go to the community, we should spread flyers and get in people's faces. Because you know what? What we're doing is obviously, I think is a good thing, or I'm going to say for now, coming to this thing and going to the crafts thing today, is that we're meeting people, we're connecting to people that are like-minded, and we should get into people's faces and we'll meet more people like us. And we grow and grow and grow. And it's not about the 99%. It's about us as people. Power to the people. Okay? So, you know, yeah.
Sure, if there's someone that wants to respond. It doesn't need to be directed to the panel, but okay. If...
I guess I'll take that. Again, with the idea of solidarity, I think that if this movement is to continue, it needs to become incredibly structured, not in a hierarchical way, but in a way that people keep regularity, start subcommittees, start meeting. I mean, I know this is already going on, but that it continues to build so that more and more people can be incorporated into the structure and plugged in easily. In that way, I think the individual struggles that are already going on and that will be created as this movement continues will be much easier for people to move on en masse.
I just want to say a little bit about the question of occupying property, which I think is a really good idea, but I also think it's a problematic idea in that we see it's both been able to catalyze a wider movement and also been able to sort of shut down that process of catalyzation. If you notice in, I believe it was Asheville and Oakland, there was two successful, and actually also in D.C., there was successful attempts to take a property. In D.C. it was the Franklin Shelter, which is former homeless shelter, a long point of contention in the social justice community in D.C. In Oakland it was a space during the general strike. In Asheville I believe it was a gas station. All three of these spaces were largely shut down very, very quickly, despite being occupied, despite despite being really interesting, inspiring actions. But they were all basically totally wiped off. right? Same thing happened in Portland, right? There wasn't the kind of media when people went said like, oh, this property's empty, we're going to take it, we're going to do something with it. You know, in many other contexts, that has worked really well. In this particular moment, in this particular context, it doesn't actually seem to be working empirically, right? I'm totally sympathetic with it. I love squatting, right? I think it's a great thing. I do see the foreclosure defense. I do see moving people who have been kicked out of their homes by the financial system back into homes or preventing them from being evicted as sort of acting to catalyze this kind of wider resistance, as upping the ante. And that, I think, is what we need to be focusing on. I think if we can, you know, if some squats come out of this moment, and if the process and the prospect of squatting becomes something that's on the table, it becomes something that's closer to a legitimate demand that you can make on the state's willingness to tolerate abandoned property, that's awesome. But I think for the purposes of advancing the movement, we need to be focusing more on the things that are related to foreclosure defense.
Real quick, I don't necessarily think it's either or. So it's possible to do, you know, both occupy, you know, occupy on Walmart and do the foreclosure, you know, and do the foreclosure defense. It's, in fact, again, that's what we want. Again, I keep on focusing on proliferation, the idea of a swarm. Think about us as bees in a swarm, right? To add on to the comment about the foreclosure thing, what would be good about foreclosure defense is you can't defend a foreclosure without actually engaging with the community, right? That is, without engaging with a physical neighborhood, because the thing is somebody who lives next door to someone who's about to be foreclosed on, has 1,000 people surrounding their house, that you have to engage with them for them to allow that, right? So that takes work, but that's a good type of work, in that I can imagine, you know, people engaging in foreclosure defenses and then informing people in the community about maybe how many other houses in the block are dealing with these issues, how they can get involved. I think that's the type of action we could be thinking about. So it's not just about identifying targets, although I think that's a good look. It's about figuring out how we grow.
I really don't want this part of the discussion to be so panel-centric. If panelists want to respond, then please do. But I'd like to see the mic making its round.
Hello, how's it going? I just wanted to say a couple things. The first thing is, in my experience over the last couple months, I mean, there's a lot of folks who I only know in this room through the efforts around Occupy. I don't know if that's the case for a lot of other people. But I feel like one of the greatest things that I've seen is a lot of folks engaging in a lot of personal development, gaining new skills, speaking in front of groups, facilitating meetings that they had probably never done, talking to strangers, signing them up, canvassing. There's an enormous amount of development, which I've personally gotten to see, and I think is one of like the best parts of my experience so far with the occupation work that's been going on. What I want to challenge the whole group, I guess the first thing is that this room looks amazing. I think that this many folks who I remember from probably whether it was the first or the second interest meeting or various GAs on McKeldin, where there's a core that is very clearly holding. I mean, even just enough interest to get you out to a meeting, even if you've only been to a few, or enough to keep doing it for those of you who've been hardcore involved. And that's also amazing, and is the most hopeful thing that I can think of. The development and the fact that folks have shown some discipline and some attention span to continue to participate, because it's the only thing that gives us a chance to do anything that we think is worthwhile or interesting, is the maintenance of the attention span and the development of our capacity. So I think those two things are wonderful, and I wanted to commend everyone who's still engaged. The challenge, which I'm sure has been discussed several times, is what the winter's gonna look like, and what 2012 is going to look like, and how to make sure that it goes to the next place instead of being stagnant or going in reverse or just tuckering out. And that, again, you know, that's about swarming, that's about what the next meme is going to be, that's about 1,000 different things, but like the folks in this room, it's actually incumbent upon us to actually figure it out. There's not going to be some imaginary outside figuring out. No one's going to write a great paper that we can read and just do. Another occupation's not going to figure it out. We can just figure, oh, we'll just use your blueprint. We're going to have to figure out what works here. And that's the challenge that I'm putting forward to the group, because I was down at the square, and you know, it's getting sketched out. I came straight from there to here. And like one of the big tents is down. I don't even know who took it. Somebody took it. I mean, but here we are, and like there's definitely consistency, and if the folks in this room decide to keep making it happen, we will make it happen. This is a huge resource in the room. So that's the challenge that I put forward to the room. We've got to have next steps and a plan that gets us through the winter and into 2012.
So we're going to shift gears a little bit, and Jerry, right here, is going to start taking stack, so he's going to keep a list of folks that want to speak so that it's not so haphazard every time the mic goes around. So stack, in case folks don't know what it is, it means that you want to put your hand up to be recognized to speak, and you want to make sure that Jerry records that you want to speak.
Hi, my name is Shallon. I think a lot of you probably know me. What I wanted to say is that what I would like to see is people start to really get comfortable with the idea of obtaining some form of permanent space. And it's not to say that the Occupy has to go away. We can still have every single GA in the open outside, barring extreme weather. But I would like to see people start to really think of eviction as a good thing and not a bad thing, because it's simply an evolution. And we have to allow ourselves to evolve. And it was something that Chino said last night, was that, you know, we spend so much time right now talking about where's my sleeping bag and why does my tent have water in it, and you know, all of that time can then be invested if we have permanent space, because we won't care what the mayor thinks. She can't come in and throw us out. We don't care about the cops. They can't come in and throw us out. All of that time can be put to something really useful. And I was watching CNN and online, and it's still there for anybody that wants to watch it. They showed an inside tour, a 3-minute clip of what Occupy Wall Street's office space that they've obtained, which was donated to them, looks like. They have both office space and they have warehouse space to store all of their goods. And it was beautiful. What was beautiful about it was that it looked like your typical office, except it had, you know, obviously a lot of different posters and pamphlets all over the place. But they were organized. They were getting things done. They were also talking about other places to occupy. But I think the big thing that was really impressive is that they couldn't care about all of these outside factors. It seems like we spend so many nights worrying about you know, just the day-to-day things. I think that Occupy would do well to be seen in a positive light, and I think one way to do that is locally. Just start to think about local action. Somebody said row homes. I think that's an awesome idea. Think about revamping a vacant lot and turning it into a playground. I think that in talking to the labor unions, the one thing I've learned is there's a lot of people out there who are truly the 99%, and they connect with the message. They're janitors, they're plumbers, they're these people that every day are working for just above minimum wage with really no chance of getting much higher than that, and they're struggling, and they get that. But they're very used to, in their lives, very kind of direct one-to-one correlation. We tend to get really caught up in talking high-level theory on the square, and that's great. We need it. But for them to connect to it, they have to see something. It has to be tangible to them. And so what I'd like to see is us, like I said, taking on permanent structure. And like I said, it doesn't have to be hierarchical, but it has to be so that we can plan to do those things so that we can touch those lives. I think that's going to be the best way that this movement can truly sustain itself, particularly locally.
Kate is next. Hey, so my name is Kate, and I have 2 points. The first is that I work sort of tangentially as an ally to an organization called Take Back the Land. And Take Back the Land is an organization that grew up out of struggles around issues of housing and homelessness in Miami. And there's one person in particular who's kind of the central theorist of Take Back the Land, although Take Back the Land is now a national movement, and that's this fellow called Max Rameau. And we were lucky enough to have Max come out and talk at the Occupy Baltimore at McKeldin Square, like a month ago, I think. And one thing that Max pointed out that I think is really important to point out again here is that we have to think about occupation in terms of liberation. So what Take Back the Land is trying to do is move for something that they're calling Occupy to Liberate. And what that is a program or a plan of action that's going to be going on throughout the winter. So gathering forces, really trying to put together strong coalitions of people that are interested in doing organizing around issues of housing, around right to public space and right to private space across the United States, and gearing up for a set of nationally coordinated spring actions. So if people are really interested in doing stuff around issues of housing, if people are really interested in doing stuff around issues of foreclosure defense, please take a look at Take Back the Land and actually look and see what they're doing. Max is actually just down in D.C. And is working, I think, a lot with One D.C., which is another organization that does some great work around housing. So it would be great to see us trying to network a little bit more with that. The other point that I wanted to make, which I guess is more of an invitation for people to just kind of throw out their ideas on, is going back to this question of proliferation and why we're not seeing that much proliferation in terms of occupies and occupations popping up in different places around the city. I'm also a veteran of the anti-globalization movement, and one of the things that was really fascinating about that movement and the way that it unfolded, especially around issues of media and issues of communication, was that you didn't really need permission to start something. You didn't feel like you needed permission to start something. It was simply the case that, you know, there was this thing called indie media that started in Seattle, and then suddenly there was indie media in the UK, in Philadelphia, in New York, and in DC. I mean, all over the place. That it was just this sort of rolling snowball effect. And we've seen some of that with Occupy in terms of a national spread, but not so much within the city. And that has been really, it's been a question for me. It's been something that's been really troubling to me. Why do we keep ending up having this centrality of McKeldin? Why aren't we talking about, you know, why aren't we talking about meetings happening in other places? And Lester, I thought you pointed out something that was so brilliant, which is that on the Occupy Baltimore website, we say, we meet at McKeldin Square at this time every night. And that, like, crystallized this for me, of the fact that we've got to think, we have to actually rethink the language that we're using to talk about this. So I would love it if people actually have ideas on what we can do to try and change the way we're talking about Occupy, try and change the way we're talking about Occupy Baltimore, and to really think through this idea of proliferation a little bit more. I would love to see some conversations on that going on.
Hi, I'm Anna. I really appreciated what Kate just brought up about changing the language of how we think about and talk about Occupy in a way that enables more proliferation. One of the things that I was thinking about, as Gage mentioned what he did about picking a target, and some other people were talking about finding other spaces to be, or whether or not we will get evicted and disencamping and whatever, is that all of the things that we're talking about, whether it's to pick a specific target or whether it's to work on anti-foreclosure things or right to homeless or right to housing, excuse me, those are campaigns. And we've been talking about Occupy and calling it a movement. And if that's true, if Occupy really is a movement, a movement is something that is bigger than a campaign. And campaigns happen within a movement. And they support a movement, but they are not the definition of the movement. The movement is something much broader, and it's aimed at larger concepts of human rights or of basic justice. And another example of a movement is the second wave of the women's movement in the 1960s and 70s, that in some ways partly started with women talking to each other about the conditions of their lives. And as they talked, they discovered that they shared all these problems in common. And they, out of that, built this network of solidarity and were able to work on things like domestic violence and unequal pay and discrimination against mothers and families. And various campaigns and efforts came out of that. There were both local and national and they were all across the map. So it's really okay. In fact, it's not just okay, but we really ought to be diverse in our thinking about where this movement is going and what we're doing. This idea of unity, I think we need to have solidarity, and we need to stay engaged with each other and stay in contact with each other so that we can spread this network of solidarity across these lines of these different interests that we have. But if this really is a movement and not just a single moment in history, then we will inevitably diversify into the interests in the campaign areas that interest us most, and we should celebrate that.
So just before the next speaker, there's a group of folks that are leaving right now, about 10 people. We just got a call that there are two paddy wagons and an ambulance that have been moved onto site next to McHaldon. So we might get a call in a minute, and we might pack up and roll down there for folks that want to roll down.
Okay. So building off of what Kate and Anna and earlier Molly said, I worry a lot that there's never going to be able to be any sort of centralized action that creates change within Occupy. As Mike pointed out earlier, we've been at this for a while and we haven't seen any policy change. And one thing that I see Occupy being effective as is a PR mechanism for all of these different movements that are going on and all of these different individual efforts. Because, you know, as we've said before, like the 99% does not break down. It breaks down into a lot of very unequal categories of people. And income inequality isn't, it's something that it's very hard to sort of band together and fight via, So what I see this is sort of happening, and Casey mentioned this earlier when she was talking about anti-BDC, is Occupy has the power to reinforce and reinvigorate existing efforts. And it has the power to bring people together with shared interests and sort of launch them out into the community to be doing things. And sort of ultimately, I would like to see Occupy more as a ballast of support and as a means of networking so that people can be out in their communities, like, fighting effective battles on the fronts that they know.
My name's Alex. Two questions that John raised on the panel in the beginning, I think, are very interesting and things that we need to try to get our heads around. And I don't have complete answers for them yet. But the two that I've been thinking about the most that I think are related to each other and have become very real questions in the past couple years because of the economic crisis are how do we as activists, as people on the left, what are our answers to the systemic crises of capitalism that we're facing right now? That's obviously a huge question. There are ways that the system will try to deal with it itself. There are ways, so we can try to kind of push that dynamic, but obviously I'm sure I'm not the only one in the room who thinks, well, we need a completely different system, right? Now that's a very difficult question, is how do we sort of get there? And I see definitely the mechanism for doing that are truly mass movements, and I think the idea of how do we proliferate should be something that stays in the forefront of our mind. But I think part of that, and the other question kind of putting a sharper level of understanding on this 99% concept. It has its limitations. Certainly, it's pushed things forward from the completely vacuous concept of the middle class, which has previously been the overarching sort of dialogue in America. We've finally kind of been able to get out of that lurch a little bit. But now I think the question of class and the 99%, what does that mean? I think one way to think about it is, as a movement, where do we actually have power? How can we actually move the system? How can we not just have a sort of communication protest, a protest that which I don't think is a bad thing particularly to start with, but how do we move beyond the sort of communication and trying to convince people of a correct argument towards disrupting society at strategic points that will give us leverage and will allow us to exercise a collective power. And I just want to raise one example that has really sparked my imagination recently, which is I'm sure people pay some degree of attention to what's been happening in Greece, a very advanced struggle going on there, as well as a very advanced attack from the ruling class in Greece and in Europe. But I read about one very inspiring action recently in the Financial Times, of all places. The bosses are more honest with each other sometimes in the press, but the workers there, one mechanism for driving the austerity measures in Greece has been sort of adding taxes onto, adding taxes onto existing bills. So one that was coming up was they were going to add something to the electricity bill, an amount that people simply couldn't pay. The union, the people who work for the public utility company, occupied the office in central Athens and said, "We refuse to cut off people's power." And they hung a banner outside of the building that said something like, "You can throw us in jail, but we won't cut off power to poor people." And I think there's a seed of something where people are using their direct power in the workplace as workers, which is also directly affecting a wider layer of society in their lives in a very concrete way that I think is a really instructive example. Thanks.
Good evening. My name is Jeff. I'm a sociologist, and so thinking about research on social movements and trying to draw some lessons here. And something I think underlies a lot of what I'm hearing tonight is what I think revolves around localism. I think if we want to remain relevant into the future, we need to think local. One of the advantages of decentralized organizations is that you can be more nimble, you can be more adaptable in different locations. I think this is a strength of this movement, and to try to think of what is the one message that's going to pull all of us together, or that's going to, you know, sink into the psyche of all Americans, if not the globe, is a mistake. We're not going to come up with that. We've got lots of small pieces that fit together into a larger puzzle. And I think if you want to remain relevant, if we want to remain relevant, we need to think Baltimore. And we need to think about how do we speak to people here? What is the language? What are the issues that matter to people here? And that's what they're doing in Denver and in Michigan and in Hawaii and everywhere else. They're thinking locally. I think the global justice movement is a useful model here. A movement of movements. It's lots of campaigns that share a common thread, but we really need to think locally, and I don't think we're doing that yet, and that's why this room doesn't reflect Baltimore yet.
A couple things I want to touch on. The power of the Occupy moment and the 99% concept, and why I think we shouldn't liquidate that concept yet, is because what it really showed in the Occupy moment really showed was this sort of coherent system that was creating these different individualistic experiences of alienation, of deceit, of being tricked, of being trampled upon. It was something that united in a totally new way everyone, from the homeless person to the recently jobless, to the veteran who was having their services slashed, to the recent college graduate or the person who's seeing a college graduation soon and finding out that they were going to be in debt for 2 decades. And that was something that was really powerful because it turned the tide of this very individualistic ideology that was, kind of being perpetuated for several decades, which many of us called neoliberalism. The danger is, of course, that people become two percenters, which is that once you get yours, you bow out. And so that's incumbent on us to constantly be reiterating that this is about a systemic phenomenon, and that it's not just about our own personal experiences of alienation, but that we need to recognize that unity, because it's a unity in oppression as well as a unity in domination. One of the reasons why this has been so frightening to the right, and if you go on social networks and websites and stuff, you can see how frightening and appalling the occupations are to the far right. It's because it has united everybody that they hate at one time. It's united the cultural studies student and the homeless person, you know, and they fear that so much. And that's one of the things we can't lose if we decamp. That to me is the major thing that we can't lose, is that connection. But we also really need to be developing a counter critique that says, well, if you don't like this, we're putting this in your face. What you've done so far is you've cast it aside. You've put it in the ivory tower and in the slums, the things that you hate. You've compartmentalized them in a certain way. We're bringing them together and putting them in your face, and we're not going to go away because the system is creating these things. The system is creating these alienations, and you can't just put it in another place while you create a crystal city in the harbor. So, like, we need to create that counter critique. We need to demonstrate that they've been cutting social services, that the homeless phenomenon is a direct byproduct of the programs and agenda that has been perpetuated in these cities. And I don't think we've been doing that quite so well in Baltimore. And finally, I have to say, I'm a bit distraught at the at the way the activist community, the pre-existing activist community, has engaged with Occupy Baltimore. In many ways, it's been one of, initial interest. But once they saw that it wasn't exactly what they wanted, or it hadn't taken those forms yet, or it didn't have the exact critiques that they had, then it became merely a critique from afar rather than an engagement. And I saw multiple groups of like 20 to 40 people stopping to attend general assemblies. Like, this is the place you're going to have the most power and the most ability to create a real progressive critique. If you can't do it amongst the people who are newly activated and are newly engaged, newly ready to challenge things, then you're really not going to have that success on a nationwide scale that people proclaim, especially those who want socialist revolution or something like that.
Person. So there are 8 people left on stack, so that might go about another 15 minutes. We're at 8:47. Do folks want to wrap it up with that, or do we want to keep on going? There's obviously some attrition, and there was the crisis. Wrap it up. Okay, so we'll close stack with that then.
Hi, I'm Jerry. I'm just gonna describe like what got me involved in all this, and I think there's a lot of discussion on what we should do, what are we going to do? And for me, like, the moment that it crystallized in my mind was I was watching some internet video of a GA at Occupy Wall Street, and it was like shortly before the arrests on Brooklyn Bridge the first time. And I've never seen the consensus model before. That was completely unfamiliar to me. And when I saw it, when I saw like thousands of people doing it at once, the thought in my head was, shit, we've just rendered everything else obsolete. Like, that's the first thought that came to my head. And I was just like, I have to be involved. I mean, it wasn't about a political message. It wasn't, political messages were part of it. Different ideologies were part of it. But it wasn't all defined by any one. It's so amorphous. I mean, we have born-again Christians on the square. We have atheists on the square, and Muslims, and Jews, and people with all stripes of political beliefs, and somehow we have this unspoken understanding that we're still there together. Like, all these people rushing out of the room, running down when our square is threatened. It's not that the square is the end all be all of the movement, but the fact that we see this attachment to it, I think, is a testament to how strong this movement has the capacity to be. Because there are a couple quotes in my head that have been just ringing through my head through this whole thing. There's a quote by Carl Jung that says, loneliness is not the state of being alone. It is being unable to express the things that are important. And I think Slavoj Žižek echoed that in his speech to Occupy Wall Street about not having the language of our unfreedom. And I think that now we're suddenly and awkwardly inspirationally finding those words and that way to communicate with each other. And so to me, this is really, it's a social movement on such a personal and individual level in that it has, for me, changed the way in which I engage socially with people, like on a one-to-one level, on, you know, every day, every moment of every day. And so to me, it's a two-month-old movement. We shouldn't get so self-conscious about, I mean, it's important to take the critiques in mind and understand that, but, you know, patience too. I mean, this is all happening so fast, and every moment we're thinking, what's next? What's the big mic check? What's going on? And really, like, this to me, I like the idea of being activated. Like we've been activated, like awoken. And this to me is like, I don't see how I could go back to doing things the way that they were being, the way I lived my life before. There's no way. No matter what people say, this movement has failed or not. Like, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that in conjunction with what you said about people's reaction, I've been canvassing with a coalition of environmental groups for a couple months now and gone out 6 or 7 times. And today I got a lot more, yeah, I hate BGE. Of course I'm in favor of wind power and forcing them to buy it. So that's one thing. The other thing is I keep sitting here feeling like it would be so neat because the first things that were said tonight were, we should be doing this and that, and we should be over here, over there in Baltimore. And I work with the 33% or the 23% of Latinos, and y'all are familiar, I'm sure, with their stress. A lot of my families have been here for 10 years, and dads had good construction jobs. Now they work maybe 2 days a week. And a lot of the other dads are working, cooking our, you know, as prep cooks, cooking in all our restaurants around Baltimore with a few hours a day. It's just another place where people could really use, you know, support and feeling like, yeah, we're not part of that 1% or whatever, 10% that says, go back home. You know, we know globalization is the reason they're here.
My name's Gage. I think what somebody said, it's a movement, it's not a moment. I agree, but I'm concerned about momentum. A lot of you know Leo. We were neighbors on Lorraine at Greenmount last April. And Leo has earned a lot of respect. He's up here cooking 4 or 5 times a week and sleeps out every single night. He gave up his apartment. He's now homeless. He lives at McKeldin Square with a Harvard 3.8. About momentum, Walmart is building a store 1/2 mile from here. The local neighborhood doesn't want it, but the Baltimore Development Corporation pushed it, recommended it to the city hall. That Walmart will create a lot of crappy, low-paying, no-benefit jobs at the expense of a lot of stores who will close and let go people who have been regular employees. So Walmart isn't a distant thing. It's right around here. I agree there should be an Occupy the Hood in every neighborhood in Baltimore. We should do that. We can do multiple things at one time. I'm just concerned that in the phase 1 of the Occupy movement, occupying a particular physical space was our symbol, our metaphor. Now we're going into phase 2 as we go into winter. What's the new kind of metaphor for what we're up to and how we rally, what do we rally around? What is the easy to understand point? And again, I think really taking on a, let's divest the 1%. I think that's the cure to the systematic problem. The answer to the systematic problem. Let's take that wealth away from them, and I think we can do it with one corporation. Walmart.
Hi, I'm Flint, and one thing that's come up a lot is similarities with this movement and the alter-globalization movement. And I feel that a lot, and I feel that first it gave me a lot of nostalgia, and then it made me feel really bad in a couple ways, because it brought with it all these flashbacks I had about, you know, consensus meetings that never ended and huge discussions about tactics that only rarely got to discussions on strategy, all this emphasis on the police who were oppressing us, everything that we see going on in Oakland and in Wall Street is stuff that many of us have trauma from the ultra-globalization movement and didn't want to go back there. And at the same time, we knew, even when we were getting up to Miami and up till 9/11, that that movement was petering out from the people who were participating because we were exhausted by what we were doing. And there were two pushes. One was, how can we actually change these global financial institutions? And does this strategy of protest at their summits work? And we didn't feel that it was. And the other is, how is this subtracting from our local activism? There was, you know, we'd come into town and there'd be 5,000 people to do a protest, and it would be a disconnection from necessarily the local folks that were going on. Sometimes there would be a chance to do an action, but then it would be go on. And at first, Occupy felt like the entire alter-globalization movement thrust into 3 months happening simultaneously around the world, and it was exhausting me. But in Baltimore, at least, I think we actually are refocusing what we're doing and doing local stuff. I thought the Another BDC is Possible was a great movement in that direction. I think when we reached out to labor movements and labor movement reached out to us, we found that, hey, here are local issues that we can be involved in and resonate with people's lives. And but that doesn't just go because capitalism, right, the 1%, is so pervasive throughout our society when we are working with center plate workers at the convention center. We are touching on those issues. When the local postal folks come down and say, hey, we need to save our jobs, well, then we're marching on the local post office. So there's all this local resonance that's going on. Now, there can be some campaigns that'll be very, very much Baltimore, like I think a lot of the folks who want to work on housing issues, and that the housing issues in Baltimore are going to be different than the housing issues in maybe some other parts of the country, because we have a lot of potential here with what to do with, you know, abandoned, blighted space, which is going to be different than what the housing issues look like in New York City. So, but I think we're kind of going in the right place. I think we see a lot of local issues that we're touching on and resonating that we're getting there. And that makes me positive about what's going on here in a way that the alter-globalization movement, as it was around summit protests, never had any kind of potential to be. And to speak locally, Occupy Baltimore has brought together the left, if I can even use that term, in Baltimore in a way it hasn't been brought together in a long time. The anti-war movement, you know, did not give us the potential to build on a lot of local class issues, a lot of police and social justice issues that this movement seems to be letting happen. And I think that's really, really positive that it's getting the left to talk to it, talk to itself, to talk to the greater community and deal with some of these issues, because in a long time, Baltimore's left has been very siloed, very isolated, even racially segregated in a lot of how it manifests. And just having this conversation going together, and at the same time, it seems to have doubled the number of usual suspects, which has also been really, really helpful and positive. So I want to see this conversation get going. And another thing that it points out to me, on one hand, is how actually divided and siloed the local labor unions are from each other. But at the same time, they're actually having a conversation, and the conversation they have to start with is, how do we relate to this Occupy thing, and how do we like engage that for our struggles? But then maybe they're also looking around and saying, well, how do we even work together as a labor movement? Because if the labor movement got together and had just like one march, it would be like four times the size of anything we ever put together as Occupy. So maybe they should do that and like hoist up the banner too.
World is possible. We are unstoppable. Another 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 world is possible.